Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com with me, your host, Tim Stillman. Massive game at the Emirates on Saturday. It looks like at the time we're recording, there were only about 100 tickets left. So surely this must be a sellout. I think we fell about 200 tickets short of selling out against Chelsea in the WSL in December. So hopefully a sellout. However, you know, more importantly, just a massive, massive game for Arsenal and Manchester United in the race for Champions League qualification, and probably two teams who quite similarly not having the seasons they really wanted so far, and a lot riding on this game. And to look ahead to this game, I thought we'd get a little bit of the Manchester United perspective. So I'm delighted to be joined by Connor Roberts from the All For United Women YouTube channel. Connor, thanks for joining us.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me on. I've been saying to everybody, I'm so excited and so nervous at the same time for this because there's so much riding on this game for both teams, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just a special thank you for coming on because you'll probably get a lot of criticism for coming on the show with me from other United fans. we'll leave it there. Connor, first of all, you know, like I said at the top, I think Arsenal and United probably kind of brothers slash sisters in arms in terms of not having the seasons they really wanted to. They both started the season by not getting into the Champions League group stage because of Paris-based teams. You know, there's been a lot of turnover at both teams. Both teams had very busy summers, kind of in and out, losing players they didn't want to lose, but bringing in big players. And I guess the principal difference between the two teams is at the beginning of the season, both managers had a year left on their contracts. Arsenal opted to extend Jonas Eidevall's and kind of have that certainty and stability, I guess. Manchester United haven't done the same with Mark Skinner, and we might come on to Mark Skinner more specifically in a moment. But what do you make of United's season so far? Because last season really felt like a breakthrough for you guys in challenging for the title, getting to the FA Cup final. How have you viewed this season so far, and perhaps some of the reasons behind it not going as well as last season?
Yeah, I mean, last season from a United point of view, it was just a complete, I mean, just fantasy from one of the best seasons I've ever had following a team around. You know, obviously with the cup final, pushing Chelsea all the way, the late winners that we had in multiple games as well. It was just such a almost perfect year. A trophy would have completely, obviously, rounded that off, so to speak. This season, I think I'm going to say this a lot throughout this recording, that we've looked good in moments. You know, you mentioned the Champions League against PSG. The second half of that, we looked solid and we were in the game. And I thought we're competing with a Champions League side here. And in the away leg, there was moments in that game I thought we're competing with them here. But we don't do that over a sustained period, over a full 90 minutes, which has ultimately been our downfall this season. We play well in 5-10 minute spells and go completely off it. And when we drop off it, the drop-off is huge. So, yeah, we've obviously had injuries, as Mark Skinner has spoken about a lot. it's talking about investment and all those kinds of things as well. But it's a real tough one because I think the squad overall has improved. But I think we lost so many players. I say lost, but we let go of a lot of players as well over the summer. And I don't think that has helped. I think we've lost that team spirit a little bit as well that we had last season. Whereas last year it was more of a team bond, and you know, we knew what team was playing, but you know, the subs were there. It felt a very close-knit group. Whereas this season, I think the quality-wise and on paper, the squad has potentially got better. I feel we've lost that little bit of, I say camaraderie, really. You know, when we went down in games last year, I always felt we'd come back, as we did on multiple occasions this season. When we go down, I'm like, oh, well, that's that then. And it seems to be that feeling of we're not going to get back into it. So I think there's a whole host of factors. Martin Ho leaving, I don't think is spoken about enough. He did a lot of stuff behind the scenes as well, on the training pitch and so on. So obviously him leaving over the summer, as well as obviously Honor and Alessia to yourselves as well, which... Yeah, two huge players from our season last year.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at it from the outside, you know, it looked like last season, kind of very good run with injuries, didn't have Europe, kind of sacked off the Conti Cup group stage, which I kind of understood last season, and in terms of them pushing for the league and the FA Cup. And like you said, some really key players have gone. Perhaps we'll talk a little bit about Onabache a bit later, because there's a question about what United will do at right back for the game on Saturday. But, you know, do you think that the amount of turnover, maybe some of that injury, I call it luck, maybe just because didn't have the same amount of games from last season, like what do you think? Do you think it is just a case of like there's been quite a lot of change in a short amount of time?
Yeah, there's that, and obviously I'm sure Mark had a way of playing at the start of the season that we saw, and I wasn't a fan of it, but obviously you mentioned the fullback, Gabby George, obviously started the season very well. Obviously, unfortunately for her season was ended you know, pretty much just as it was getting going. So yeah, obviously our back line has been not decimated, but it's been pretty much one more injury short of having no fit defenders for our bench and so on. So yeah, obviously I'm sure we're going to talk about it as well in terms of what we're going to do at right back at the weekend, because there's obviously doubts over Jade as well. So it's going to be changed up again, and I think that's been mostly our problem. You know, we've seen it not just due to injuries, just in general. I don't think Mark knows what his best team is. We've seen so many different midfield combinations, whether Miazao has been in and out, Ladd's been in and out, Lisa's now coming in and out, Guerrero came in, then got injured, Tooney's been in and out, and that front three is constantly changing as well. And only in recent weeks we're seeing a stable front three. So whereas last season, I think we recorded something last April, and we were saying you almost know 10 out of the 11 United players picks itself. This season, I couldn't tell you three or four, let alone 7, 8, 9, 10, so on. So it's been a lot of changes behind the scenes, but on the pitch as well, it's constantly changing. And I know talk about rotation, but I think when you've had so many players leave and a few in as well, obviously, and Miazar and Jace obviously learning the language as well, it was always going to be tough to try and integrate everybody into the team.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I saw when Arsenal played United earlier in the season, JC with a translator on the pitch after the game, earwigs their conversation a little bit. And obviously in the backdrop, you know, we mentioned that Mark Skinner's contract is up at the end of the season. You referenced Martin Ho going to be a head coach at Bran, who obviously done really well in the Champions League group stages this year. Before we talk about, I guess, some of the conversation around Mark's future, I mean, how do you see that? Do you think he'll stay? Do you think that the uncertainty around that has been unhelpful?
I don't think it's helped, because obviously the club can't properly plan. I think that's part of the reason we didn't see any transfers in January, is because the club are thinking probably long term, you know, if he's not going to be here, why sign and spend a load of money for a manager that's potentially not going to be here in 6 months? I think from a player point of view, I think there's potentially one or two contracts that are holding over that as well, and players looking at it going, do I really want to still be here if under current management and so on? So I think there's a lot riding on it. I think I really don't know which way it's going to go at the moment. There's a lot riding on the end of the season. Obviously, we've seen today from the Premier League with Ineos and the 25% with Sir Jim Ratcliffe. So I think that's going to have a big part to play. How quick can they get some kind of structure in place, and how much are they going to look at the women's side? I know that we're going to come to that in a bit, but how much are they going to look at it as a pressing matter? And are they just going to look at it and potentially do a short-term fix and go, right, we'll give you another year and assess things further down the line? I'm really not sure. So for me, looking at the squad we've got, we should be aiming, we should be in the top three, or at least aiming for that and going far, obviously, in the FA Cup. So I think he's starting to feel the pressure. I think it's evident in his interviews and what we're seeing. And yeah, he's fighting for a contract. He knows that. Obviously, fans are looking at it as well. He's under pressure. I don't think he'll know that himself. He spoke about the pressure numerous times. So it's tough, but I think that's what you get. You know, Manchester United manager, you're going to get that pressure put on yourself by players, by fans, by people above you as well.
Yeah, and that brings us nicely on to another, I guess, point of commonality I think Arsenal and United have is, you know, the respective fan bases, and I guess that burgeoning fan culture. Arsenal fans are getting it in the ear at the moment for swearing at football matches. Imagine that. And obviously we've seen kind of scenes this season, I mean, maybe slightly blown out of proportion at the Chelsea game, where, I mean, it was one fan holding a Skinner out sign. But, you know, we have seen that, you know, the trip to Malta and the kind of the chanting about Mark Skinner, and there does seem to be a bit of an underlying movement there. I mean, what's your position on that? I mean, even over and above your own opinion on, because we this is quite new in women's football. I think it's fair to say that kind of, you know, actively taking against the manager and divided fan base and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll come to my own view in a second. Obviously, you mentioned the Chelsea game. I was at that game and it was quite near. Obviously, the fan that had the sign, and my person, each to their own. I think I've got nothing against it. Me personally, I would never chant a manager to be sacked, because I think you're talking about somebody's job. But I've got no issue with people that do. I think after that game, it's grown more at the recent games at Villa and at Brighton at LSV. There was a lot more signs like that. There was a couple at Man City away as well. You know, similar kind of messaging, talking about obviously Skinner out, and I can't remember the exact wording, but there was a lot more, certainly at the City away game 3 days later in the Conti Cup. So yeah, my view on it is just each of their own. I think if people want to voice that, then fine. But equally, if people want to sing in support of Mark Skinner, that's also fine. I think you've got to have it both ways. Obviously, it's not, like I said before, for me personally, I don't like it, but I'm not against it, because, you know, as long as it's done respectfully, and it's just, as we've seen, just if you're holding up a sign that's not, you know, offensive or anything like that, I think, you know, that's okay. But I don't think it's a massive deal. I think it got blown a lot out of proportion. Certainly, as you mentioned, obviously Chelsea, I think it was blown up. It's possibly because of obviously Rachel Williams' actions, obviously telling the fan to put the sign down. I don't think that was potentially helpful. So things like that. But it's a tough situation, because, you know, word gets around, and obviously within the fan base it is very, very split. You know, there's a lot of people that feel that way, but there's equally a lot of people that still support Mark Skinner and want him to obviously progress further into next season as well.
Yeah. I, you know, the kind of Rachel Williams asking the fan to put the sign down. I mean, generally speaking, I'm not fond of players doing things like that, but at the same time, like, Rachel Williams and Mark Skinner go back quite a long way. And, you know, from her point of view, if it's, you know, a manager she's worked with a lot and has a good professional relationship with, you know, it must be hard to see that as well. So I can kind of see both sides. And yeah, I just think it's really interesting that, like, because this is all quite new, actually, in women's football. But one of the things, again, from the outside, that I've heard a lot of people talk about, and I've considered myself during Mark Skinner's whole reign, is, I mean, you referenced it, like, last season, it was kind of 12 players, really. It was that right wing spot. Is that Lucia Garcia or Nikita Paris? And the rest of the team, you could just reel off. And but then at the same time, there do seem to have been a lot of players that have come in and then gone out of the club who just haven't really had much of a look in. And that, you know, I wonder whether you think, is that, you know, are those players kind of foisted on Mark Skinner a little bit by the club? Or, you know, how do you see some of that recruitment, where you've seen players come into Manchester United, not really feature, and then leave?
Yeah, this is my biggest area, I think, of frustration when it comes to looking at some of the things that Mark maybe has said and things like that. Like you said, it is potentially people above him making decisions. I don't know this as facts, so I'm purely just going to speculate on a couple of things, whether it's people above him that are making the signs that he doesn't particularly want. I'll use Wilder as an example. We know that that was a Casey signing. That's the groundwork was laid out by Casey before she left, and obviously the club just followed through with that when Mark came in. But
us and Nikita Paris. Exactly. Not a Jonas Eidevall signing, but yeah.
But I think that's the only one I'll give him where I think that's not really his sign. I look at players like Tunkara and Adrian Leon last summer. Two players, you know, he was a year in at this point, paid money for, got them in, hardly played. They leave a year later. And I'm like, what? To me, that just seems such a waste. It's a waste of the player's career because they've just basically had a year of not doing anything. And it's a waste of money, really, from it. I know we're not talking millions here, but it's still, from a women's football side, it just seems a complete waste. And other players will look at that and think, well, would I want to go there and just sit around for a year and potentially not play? So, I think it can definitely be labelled at Mark. It can be labelled at the people above him, whoever's making these decisions, because he talks a lot about, and we've seen it with Lisa Nilsson recently, talking about adapting to his play style and understanding the Man United way and things like that, which I fully get, by the way. I understand that some players do need time to adapt. But I also flip it around and think, well, why are we buying so many of those types of players then that always need to adapt, you know, 6-7 months into a season and potentially still don't play even after doing all of those kind of things? So I go back to Wilder. I feel like he said a lot about Wilder in press conferences and things like that, talking about things she needs to improve on. Yet we saw other players making those mistakes that he was saying that Wilder need to improve on. So I think it's a tough one. I think he's very much set on players he trusts. It's very much a trust thing, which is the same for any manager. You're going to pick the players that you trust. So whether Mark just doesn't trust the players, you know, he's looking to his bench or looking to the players on training that he's picking for a matchday squad, whether he just doesn't trust them, I'm not too sure. But like I said before, like this season, we've seen so many changes. I think that's purely because he just doesn't quite know, because he's had all these players come in, I said, from all over, you know, Europe and the Americas and so on, that he doesn't quite know how to fit in. So it's a real tough one when you've got so many players that leave and so many, like I said, like obviously came in last summer. Yeah, it's a real tough one. But this is certainly my biggest area of frustration, because it's just, I don't know why we buy half of the players that we do and just don't see them and then move them on after a year.
Yeah, and well, I guess let's come on to one player who maybe took, I don't know if it's fair to say that really, but Nikita Paris was, like we said, kind of a little bit in and out, you know, sharing that right wing spot with Lucia Garcia last season. I think, again, from the outside, looked like she was fine, probably no more, no less. This season, she's really in red hot form at the moment, scoring a lot of goals, playing through the middle. And I guess Skinner's found something in terms of moving JC out wide and putting Nikita Paris up front. And again, just looking at highlights, the goals she's scoring are really kind of striker goals, really 6-yard box, picking up rebounds, even headers and things like that. How, because I guess we're going to get into two of the big players United lost this summer. It kind of looks like from the outside that the Russo question is answered by, you know, that JC and Keats partnership with kind of Malvin Mallard as a bit of a super sub.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk for absolute days about Jay, especially on the right-hand side. So for me, she's one of those players. She can beat any fullback in the league right now. I think we've saw that even in the game against Chelsea. We're obviously flying right now. The goal came because of her movement down the right-hand side and obviously getting it across box. So, yeah, as you said there, I think Paris down the middle. Fans have been saying this pretty much since the very start of the season, that we want to see her out on the right and Paris down the middle, and only in recent weeks are we starting to see that. I think Jace's biggest problem when we first saw her come into the side, it seemed like the other players just weren't understanding that. She'd beat a couple of players, as we see in pretty much every time she gets the ball, but then there was no one anywhere near her because she was almost two steps ahead of everybody else. Whereas I think now with a player like Nikita Paris, who's obviously very intelligent, she's dropping into those positions, like you said, almost striker finishes. The two goals against Brighton that we scored are a prime example of that. You know, people can say, oh, they're easier goals. I don't think they are. The movement of her to pull away from the defender, almost dropping to near where the penalty spot is, And I think we're finally getting that understanding, which we saw with, I know we're going to talk about, but Honor and Alessia last year. A lot of the goals Alessia scored was because of that dropping a little bit deeper and Honor coming in from the right-hand side. So we're starting to see that a little bit more now. Obviously, you mentioned Mallard. I'd love to see that as a front three. For some reason, we just can't seem to see Mallard and Jace play together for whatever reason. Mark just doesn't want to. It's like as soon as one goes off, the other one comes on and vice versa. So I'd love to see that as a front three. Mallard off the left, Paris down the middle, and Jace off the right, and just see how it would develop. But yeah, it's got to be consistent because, like I said before, we've chopped and changed. And yeah, I'm glad to see Nikita Paris hitting the numbers she's on. Obviously, 7-6 at the time of recording this since the turn of the year. Absolutely on fire. And she's the one player right now you'd look at and go, you're not dropping her out of that front line.
Yeah, and we're recording this on the day the England squad's announced. And I guess I'll ask the question, but I think it's kind of two questions about, you know, are you surprised that she's not in it? Because there's the, you know, I don't think many people would have been surprised if she had worked her way back into it. But at the same time, there's the, but it's Serena Wiegmann. And it tends to take her quite a while to change her mind. But just before this podcast, I was reading what Serena said in the press conference today. And actually, if I was a United fan, I'd be quite enthused by it, just because Serena said that this time she picked up the phone and spoke to Keats, which I gather she hasn't done for a few months, but it sounded like the conversation was, okay, we thought about you this time, keep doing this, and next time you might be in. Which, you know, if I were a United fan, I'd look at that and say, great, because that really gives her the motivation to, I'm not sure Keats lacks for motivation, but, you know, to really keep pushing. I mean, were you surprised to not see her in the squad?
Surprised? Unfortunately, no. Because I think I kind of thought it was going to be the usual team. Obviously, with Leah back in, obviously from an Arsenal point of view, back into England as well. That was probably the one in there. So I'm not surprised. I'm gutted for her because I think she's spoken a lot over the last year about getting back into England, and obviously speaking about, obviously didn't make the World Cup either, you know, talking about that. And, you know, she was our top scorer in 2023. She's gone into this year, like as I said a second ago, 7-6. I don't know what more she can possibly do to get in it. Obviously, you mentioned Serena's reasoning there in terms of just keeping it going and everything else, which obviously I hope she does. I'd love her if she can hit 20 goals this season, which she's on track to do. That'll be incredible. So, yeah, I really feel for her, but I just don't know what else she can do. I know, obviously, England have got so many good forwards, but I feel like in games like this, you know, they're not qualifiers, they're not, you know, big tournaments or anything like that. It's a couple of friendlies. I don't see the issue of just putting, you know, we're not talking about a youngster's breaking through here. You know, this is Nikita Paris, who's been there, you know, won a load of things and everything else, and has been around England before as well, so. Yeah, I'm not fully surprised. I'm just more gutted for her because she deserves it off the form that she's been on this season.
Yeah, I wonder if Rachel Daly wasn't a fullback option, whether she might have got in, whether that's kind 100%. Of kept Rachel Daly in there just ahead of her by a nose, perhaps. So, I mean, looking at the game on Saturday, I think fairly obvious we'll be looking at a front three of Gulton, Nikita Paris and JC with Ella Toon behind them. Let's go a step back into midfield, because last season, I think Katie Zellum and Hayley Ladd, I can't remember a game they didn't play together in the WSL or the FA Cup. But this season, that slightly changed that platform. And a lot of Arsenal's game plan at Leigh Sports Village was about stopping those two players. So I don't think Arsenal are going to do this again, but they played Kim Little and Alessia Russo wide. And a lot of playing Kim wide was about her coming in and marking Katie Zellum. So that shows you how much respect I think Jonas Eidevall has or had for that, like, midfield kind of double pivot. Do you think it will be? I mean, Katie Zellum will start, I think, but do you think Hayley Ladd will partner her, or what do you think will happen in there?
It's interesting you say that. When you were asking that question, and I was just trying to think when the last time we didn't see Ladd and Zellum last season, and it was only once from memory in the league, and it was when it was Spurs, and it was Bo Risa and Ladd, and the only reason it was because Bo Risa was because Zellum was suspended. I can't actually think of another game where it wasn't those two. Lisa for me has been fantastic in recent weeks, you know, progressing the ball forward. She's got one hell of a strike on her, and she's, you know, very physical as well. I've really enjoyed watching her in recent weeks. However, I do think he'll go for Ladd on Saturday, purely off the base of our defence is a bit shaky at the moment. It's going to be a change back four anyway. I think he'll revert back to what he knows, you know, more frequently, and Ladd offering that more, I guess, defensive stability. And I guess kind of without going into too tactical, but I think he'll be out of possession. It'll turn him more into a back five, and it'll be Ladd dropping between the two centre-backs and Zellum almost being like that quarterback just in front. So kind of a back six as a defensive unit, but more of a back five with Ladd dropping in there. So I think it will be Ladd off that. And I'm not against either, as you said there. I think Katie Zellum divides opinion amongst a lot of fans, I think, which is a bizarre one. Her numbers speak for herself. I don't think she's a bad player. I think she gets exposed a lot. I think she, especially this season, we've been trying to force her into, for me, something that she's not, into this kind of lone six. You know, Kira Walsh, you know, Oberdorf, you know, Volte type player. I don't think she is that. She needs a player alongside her, like a Ladd or Lisa Nielsen, whoever it is, to almost, you know, play a double pivot with her. So, yeah, she'll be, obviously, she said she'll be there. He'll be Tooney in front of him, and yeah, I think he'll go for Ladd. But I'm not against either, to be honest. The form Lisa Nielsen's been in, as long as she will help defensively, which I'm just thinking back to the last time she did play in a big game as the Manchester Derby at Old Trafford. Obviously, that didn't go too well. Thinking back to that, so yeah. I've kind of talked myself into hoping it's Ladd now, just thinking back to the Derby at Old Trafford.
Yeah. And like Arsenal are in a situation where that midfield double pivot, they've got four players and could really play any combination of them. I'm thinking it'll be Leah Volte, Victoria Pullova. I think we'll see Kim Little in the number 10 position. And I think a lot of that will again be about her looking after Katie Zellum. A little bit. So I think that's a really, really intriguing area of the team. Let's go to defence then. Now, because Jade Riviere, I believe, is injured. It looks like she's not going to the Gold Cup. So that was very giveth and taketh away. Canada say that the players can stay, and then Jade Riviere is subsequently injured. I guess, how do you see, first of all, how do you see the back four lining up? You referenced there have been lots of injuries. Apologies, my neighbours constantly set the smoke alarm off, and they've done it again. If you can hear the beeping in the background. How do you expect the defence to line up? And maybe just a bit on recovering from the loss of a player like Onabache, who, for my money, is probably the best fullback in the world, not least because she can play on both sides equally effectively.
No, 100% on her to start with. Yeah, I mean, if, you know, obviously the reports that came out about Karshawi potentially going to Barcelona, that should be illegal, in my opinion. Karshawi on the left and Honor on the right hand side, that's just no, that can't be allowed. Yeah, she's just an exceptional fullback, and I felt a bit sorry for Jade, because when she came in, everyone was like, oh, it's Honor 2.0, you know, we're in, kind of expecting Honor from the start, and that's not her. She's not going to be Honor. You know, I want her to be the best Jade, not, you know, obviously just replicating what Honor can be. And, you know, Jade has came. She's been very good since she was played out of position in the games against PSG. She was playing like a right winger to kind of deal with Chiwenga and Karshaw on that left-hand side. And since then, she's really grown in. I think most fans would say that, you know, the last couple of weeks, she's been one of our best players. And obviously now has picked up this injury. She won't be there this weekend. So now we're looking at a case of it's likely going to be Hannah Blundell on the right-hand side, which she can do a job there. But in my opinion, she's just not as strong. Yeah. On that right hand side, obviously she's gonna have Mea Letizia alongside, which is fine. Mea can cover a lot of that. It's the left hand side, and your Arsenal viewers are gonna love this, that I really worry about, because we've been playing Gemma Evans there in recent weeks. Now Gemma Evans is a good defender; she's just not a left back, and we saw it in the game against City in particular. Chloe Kelly tore it inside and out constantly, beating her every single time. So I don't really know what I want to see, to be honest, because the other option is putting Leah Galton at left back. And if we do that, we did that in the derby. And again, the same thing happened again, got caught out so many times on that right hand side. Now, I assume from an Arsenal point of view, it's going to be somebody like Beth Mead on the right hand side. So, you know, just casually, just one of the best right side wingers about. So it's going to be really tough. I really worry for us on that side. Whoever's playing that left side of midfield, I imagine it's Ladd, is going to have to, I think, cover a lot of space on that left side, because I think it's going to be, I think he'll go for what we've seen in recent weeks with Gemma Evans. So Gemma, Millie Turner, Mayer and Hannah on the right. But I really don't know, because I worry for any of those alternatives. Whatever happens, someone's playing out of position. Because the other thing is, you keep Hannah Blund down on the left, you put Mayer at right back, and you go for Gemma and Millie as your back two. Then you're disrupting the back two. You're moving Millie across to right centre back, and you're putting Mayer at right back, where she's not played in the whole time she's been at United. So, yeah, I worry for that back line and just what we can put out. But we deal with the hand we're dealt, so to speak, now.
Yeah, I think on Arsenal's right, it'll definitely, like, Arsenal are going for continuity up front at the moment, because they've been a bit disrupted in other areas. In defence, they're trying to reintegrate Leah Williamson. We've lost Emily Fox now, so I think it'll be Katie McCabe at right back for this game, and Steph Catley at left back. So I think it'll be McCabe and Mead. And that's actually quite interesting if Hayley Ladd does play on that left side, with a view to moving over. McCabe's going to play at right back, and I think potentially invert into midfield. So maybe that's an area to watch as well. But I think for Arsenal, you can really predict the front three of Mead, Ford and Russo, because it's not really clicked yet. And I think the kind of coaching staff want that to click and want to give it as much time together as possible. And with Lena Hurtig injured, we've lost another wide option. So we basically only really have three wingers anyway, with Chloe Lacasse there. So I think Arsenal's front three is going to be pretty set in stone. We heard the reception for Russo at LSV in October. So I think we pretty much know what the away end's going to be like in terms of her. I just wanted to touch on, I guess, just a couple of questions to finish up. First off, you referenced Ineos earlier coming in, and today, on the day of recording, on Tuesday, that's all kind of gone through with Sir Jim Ratcliffe. I know I've read that they've already met with the women's side of the club. What's the kind of feeling vis-a-vis whether, I mean, it strikes me that, like, everyone's very down on the Glazers, and understandably so, and that actually, for a relatively modest investment, like a quick and relatively speaking cheap win, would be for them to really, really kind of go, yeah, we're going to throw it all behind the women's team. Is there any indication yet about Ineos and what impact that might have on Manchester United women?
Yeah, I mean, they're saying the right things, which they you know, Jim Ratcliffe and so on, they're going to do. They're not going to come in and start saying the wrong thing. So I'm always a bit skeptical when people say, oh, look at what they said about this, they're going to do this and this. I'm like, well, they're going to say that because they want, obviously, win over the fans from the start. I think, like you said there, they could have so many quick wins. It's not going to cost them a lot of money, because women's football is not at the point of men yet in terms of the money that's in the game. So it wouldn't cost them an absolute fortune. I think, you know, the facilities wise, obviously the new facility at Carrington is top notch. You know, I wish United would shout about it more, you know, in terms of what's just been built for the women's team. But other than that, I want them to come in and actually put a proper structure in place for the people above Mark Skinner, and not having people doing jobs for the men's side and the women's side, not having people just starting a job for the women's side and all of a sudden actually the men's team needs you, so then they get moved over to the men's side.
Who did that happen with again? Like, was it a physio or something?
Yes. Yeah. So we've had a couple of physios and a couple of people behind the scenes as well. Who've had people dealing with contracts that don't fully understand women's football and just letting them run down. You know, starting. I'll use an example. I won't say the player, but there was an example with a player that gave them a contract offer in the summer before. Didn't go back to the negotiating table till 3 weeks before the end of the season. And it's just, you can't deal with that when they're out of contract that next summer. So when you're dealing with things like that. So I just hope they get women's football people in place with a proper structure there. Because obviously Polly Bancroft came in. Again, she's been a bit hit and miss in terms of some of the decisions that she's made. So I'm quietly optimistic, but I think until I see it, because there's been so many promises over the years from, you know, under the Glazer ownership and various people that have come in. I just hope that, you know, the girls deserve to be treated, you know, fairly and invested in as well, because we've got a good group there. It just needs to be invested in well and, you know, concerns listened to.
Yeah, and I think we've seen on the Arsenal side as well, we had a couple of botched transfer windows, summer 22, last January. There was quite a bit of ill feeling towards Claire Wheatley, the head of women's football. But actually what Arsenal have done is Claire's still in the same position, but they've just hired a load more recruitment staff, basically. And all of a sudden, whether they're the right transfers or not, but transfers are getting done far more easily now. And it turns out that Claire Wheatley wasn't the problem with that. It was just, you know, the support structures around. So I think you're quite right on that. Just the last one to finish, coming into this game from an Arsenal perspective, there's a 4-point gap from Arsenal to Manchester United at the moment, from third to fourth. I think it's definitely a must not lose game for Manchester United. If that becomes a 7-point gap, not completely over, but, you know, potentially semi-fatal. But do you think it's a must win?
I'm going to say yes, purely off the basis, as you said, obviously a draw keeps it at four and six behind. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with City and City and Chelsea as well, on Friday. So there's that. If Chelsea win that, I think they've pretty much got the title wrapped up. But I think if City go on and win that one, you know, we're even further behind them. So then that game on Saturday becomes even more important that we can't let that gap go to seven or even stay at four, because I just don't think there's going to be enough opportunity. I know, obviously, you're not going to want to be reminded of this, but obviously West Ham did cause an upset, but I just don't think there's going to be loads more of those types of results. So I'm just looking at who else Arsenal have got to drop points. Same as us, obviously, got the City and Chelsea.
We've got to go to Chelsea and City, yeah.
So if similar to us, except we've just got Chelsea at home on the last game of the season, and we know what happened a couple of years ago, and we had to win against Chelsea to secure top three, and that didn't go too well. So yeah, I think it is must win from our point of view, and not just from the points and things like, because obviously the points takes it down to one and we're right back in the fight again. I think just more from a morale point of view, just getting a win over someone in the top three. We did it obviously last season, you know, pretty well, obviously
massive, you know, springboard as well.
Exactly. Obviously, the game at the Emirates last year was a massive springboard for us, and going on and having that confidence that we can beat teams in, you know, in the top three and above us, and probably should have done the double over City as well. You know, played pretty well at the Etihad, and obviously won the game at home. So, I think from that point of view, yeah, just more from a morale and obviously from the points point of view. But I think the last thing I'll say in terms of the game, this game is very much, you've mentioned it a second ago, in terms of the reception Russo got obviously at LSV. She's going to get a better one, I think, at the Emirates than she did at LSV. But this game for me is just fully set up for the storytellers and for the blog writers and the match reports and things like that. If it's a Russo winner or a Nikita Paris winner, I think either one of those.
Or Mariette saves a penalty or something.
There's so many like outcomes like that that I think of. It's just like, it's just set up for something like that, isn't it? That will be, obviously, it's just fairy tale almost about it. So, I mean, just I'll throw that back to you actually very quickly. Is it a must win for Arsenal, do you think? Do you think you have to win it like or not?
So it's definitely a must not lose. I think it kind of depends on what happens with the Chelsea City game, because like you say, if City win that, I think you've got first and second, and then you've got third and fourth, and those two things are going to be quite distinct. I mean, in terms of the belief of the team and the fans, Arsenal have to win it, I think. I think Arsenal, you know, the season has not gone how people wanted. The title looks not quite gone, but close. And going out of the FA Cup and all of that, really, it's get to the Conti Cup final and put that. What I'm looking at is put that distance to United, and then we can start looking up. That. Realistically, that might not mean winning the league, but we know through Champions League qualification that actually finishing second over finishing third, still not a guarantee, but it's a lot better. And so that is something tangible to aim at, even if it isn't what Arsenal want. But so, mathematically for the league, a draw is kind of all right in terms of keeping that gap to United. But I think given the way the season's gone for the fans, emotionally, in terms of their connection to the manager as well, it's definitely must win. I think if Arsenal don't win that game, the manager, whether he's under pressure internally, I kind of doubt it at this stage, but will come under quite a bit of pressure from the fans, I think. So I'm kind of going to say it's a must win for Arsenal, even if it isn't, strictly speaking, mathematically, if that makes sense.
Not just in terms of the points as well. I think the fact that it's at the Emirates, as you mentioned at the start, yeah, it should be a sellout as well. It's just a big occasion as well, I guess, for bringing obviously new fans into Arsenal as well. And I think, obviously last season United got the late winner obviously with Russo, but I feel like that in itself, as you said, obviously there's a little bit of pressure now building at Arsenal. For me personally, I would look at it as a must win for both, because I think both, as you said, kind of not similar seasons, but again underwhelming, I think, yep, when you look at players that have come in and things like that. And it's, yeah, there's a lot riding on it, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Arsenal have put more pressure on themselves in these games, because actually these games do suit Arsenal better. Like, they've beaten City and Chelsea at home in the WSL, drew away at United as well. So actually these games suit Arsenal a lot better. When you look at who Arsenal have lost to, Liverpool, West Ham, Spurs, there's a theme in all of those. We struggled against Villa, we struggled against Bristol City. Like, this game to me plays much more into Arsenal's potential strengths, but I do think that puts an extra pressure on Arsenal in these games. And it's the same with thinking about Arsenal having Chelsea away and City away, towards the end of the season. I'm more comfortable in those games in terms of it suiting Arsenal, but at the same time, it kind of makes them must win when you drop points elsewhere. So this one, I think there will be, there's a lot riding on this, and Jonas knows that. When I spoke to him on Sunday after the City game, he said this is a huge week, and obviously this is going to go out after the LCL Conti Cup quarterfinal, but if Arsenal aren't 7 points clear of United and in the Conti Cup semi-final on Sunday morning, I think a lot of people are going to be very unhappy, put it that way.
No, I can fully see that one.
Yeah, yeah. And on that, I don't want to say sour note, but, listen, they're big clubs. This is a really big game for both teams, and that's just how it is. It's pressure, and as, Jonas is very fond of saying, pressure is a privilege and all of that, maybe less so for the fans and those of us kind of watching the games through our fingers, which obviously I'll be in the press box, but that's still what I'll be doing. Are you coming down for the game?
Indeed, we'll be there in the away end. It's, as I said at the start, I'm so excited for it, but I'm just so nervous, because I don't know. I mean, it's what we live for, isn't it, as football fans. We love these big games and the big things, because you never know. I'm not as confident as I was last season, but I feel like you just don't know in football. We could go there and win, and it could catapult our season. So that's what I'm hoping, obviously, from a United point of view anyway.
Yeah. And it was a really kind of up and down, bit of a boomerang game back in October as well. And a draw was probably a fair result in that game. But let's see what Saturday brings. Anyway, Connor, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
No worries at all.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And that's all we have time for this week. I don't know when we'll do the next podcast, maybe during the February international break when things are a bit clearer. But like I said, I think this game on Saturday, going into an international break as well, that's another factor. Whoever loses this or doesn't get the result they want has some time to stew over it. Hopefully Arsenal fans won't be doing that stewing, but we'll probably do something during the February international break for you. But until then, thanks so much for joining us, and goodbye.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.